Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Friday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review, also the co-author of Heavy Lifting. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today, as usual. And Jim, it wouldn't be anything but appropriate if we didn't end the week with at least one martini devoted to the campus craziness, but we're happy to report that today it's in the good martini after spending several days in the crazy martini, and that's because in addition to all the chaos that happened at Yale and Missouri and other campuses around the country this week, on Thursday there was the much ballyhooed Million Student March demanding all sorts of things, mainly free tuition and $15 minimum wage and things like that. And the leader of this movement is a young lady named Keely Mullen, who went on the air with Neil Cavuto over at the Fox Business Network, and this very memorable exchange took place.
So the three core demands of the National Day of Action are free public college, a cancellation of student debt, and a $15 an hour minimum wage for people who work on the campus.
And how's that going to be paid?
Great question. I'm not sure if you're talking on, like, a national level or at particular schools. I can sort of touch on both.
Someone has to pick up the tab. Who would that be?
The 1% of people in society that are hoarding the wealth and really sort of causing a catastrophe that students are facing. I mean, we have a relationship right now where 1% of the population owns more wealth than the 99% combined.
How much higher do you think? How much more do you think they should pay?
I think enough until we have a system where not one in two American families are threatened with poverty.
So where do they go? Let's say if you tax them, they're smart folks, these people, these 1% hoarders, right? So if they leave here, then who's going to pay for all this stuff that you want?
If they leave?
The country.
There's always going to be a 1% in the U.S.
So, Jim, they're going after the 1%, and eventually you and I will be the 1%.
Somebody's going to be 1%. So, you know, there's always somebody else we can tax more. That's it in a heartbeat. You know what's really inspiring and reassuring and just kind of life-affirming about this exchange here, Greg?
What's that?
Apparently she's the best they got. Who do they turn down? Who is the one who said, look, we're sorry. We just don't think you're the person who can go on Neil Cavuto's program and make an effective case. When you and I attempt to, you know, kind of sneer at campus leftists and they're ridiculous, they're know-nothing ideas, their belief that they can, you know, get something for nothing and get somebody else to pay, their sense of entitlement, we do a voice kind of like hers, and we say things like her as parody, and she just like is the embodiment of it. If this woman did not exist, Greg, we would have to invent her. She is perfect. She is brilliant. I want her to speak at the Democratic National Convention. I want her to be Hillary's running mate, even though she's not old enough. Give this woman as much of a spotlight as possible. I don't want to give her my pocket change, much less free tuition, forgiveness of all debts, and $15 an hour.
I don't know
if she get 15 cents an hour.
I find it fascinating that it's other people's responsibility to pay for her education. And if you don't pay for it, you're a hoarder.
Yes. Hoarder is basically a word for somebody who's got something you want.
Oh, man. All right. On to the more depressing stuff. Let's go to the bad martini now. And Republicans at the national level are biting off their fingernails over the fact that Donald Trump and Ben Carson are still in first and second place. The Washington Post, Philip Rucker, and Robert Costa, a National Review alum, with the story today. And they quote extensively early on from Eric Etch-a-Sketch Fernstrom. His quote is, "The rest of the field is still wishing upon a star that Trump and Carson are going to self-destruct. But he said that they have to be made to self-destruct, and nothing has happened at this point to dislodge Trump or Carson." He says what's adding to the frustration here is that we're heading into the holiday season, and that is essentially dead time in a campaign. And the next thing you know, we're only weeks away from the first votes of the primary season. But here's the really depressing paragraph. According to other Republicans, some in the party establishment are so desperate to change the dynamic that they are talking anew about drafting Romney. Despite his insistence that he will not run again, friends have mapped out a strategy for a late entry to pick up delegates and vie for the nomination in a convention fight. According to the Republicans who were briefed on the talks, though Romney has shown no indication of reviving his interest, unquote. Jim, we all wish Mitt Romney had won in 2012, but please turn the page.
I guess there are three potential nominations or things that will never go away, no matter what happens, Greg. The first is that Trey Gowdy will be Speaker of the House, right? Second one, I you don't hear it as much as you used to, but for a while it was Senate Majority Leader Ted Cruz.
Mm-hmm.
And the third one will be President Mitt Romney. Three. Each time these guys say, look, I don't want the job. I've got another job that I'm looking for. Mitt Romney's happy with his life. He's not running. We want to talk about, you know, the dedicated diehard dead enders that Rumsfeld used to talk about in Iraq, you know. Or maybe you want to use the metaphor of the Japanese soldier trapped on some island in the Pacific who doesn't realize that the war is over. There are apparently this small group of Romney fans who are just, the dream still lives, all right? It can still happen, you know. If the candidate himself is closed the door, it's time to move on, gentlemen. It's baffling. It's weird. Some people say, this shows how weak the Republican field is. I don't think it's necessarily the case. I think it's much more that there's a group of people who really like Mitt Romney, who's a very admirable man, and we wish he is president, but he's not interested, who just kind of love that idea in their head so much that, you know, call Paul Ryan, tell him to quit the House. We're getting the band back together, you know. Time to move on, gentlemen. It's time for heavy lifting. It's time to grow up. We'll put aside those childhood dreams.
Oh, man. Well, the good news, potentially, for those who don't think Donald Trump would be a good presidential nominee is perhaps someone else doesn't need to make himself destruct. We'll see as time goes on. But Donald Trump was in Dodge City, Iowa overnight and gave a stemwinder of a speech that lasted, I believe, about an hour and a half. And he went after many different opponents for the Republican nomination. But the one getting the attention today is his attempt to discredit the personal story of Ben Carson, his closest rival in Iowa, specifically the story that's come out in Carson's new book about how he tried to stab a classmate, was unsuccessful, and ultimately that led to him taking a closer look at his life and changing things drastically. And here's Trump's characterization of that.
He took a knife, and he went after a friend, and he lunged that knife into the stomach of his friends, but lo and behold, it hit the belt. It hit the belt, and the knife broke. Give me a break. Give me a break. How stupid are the people of Iowa? How stupid are the people of the country to believe this crap? So Carson, the knife broke. There it is. It's laying in the, And he goes into the bathroom for a couple of hours, and he comes out, and now he's religious. And the people of Iowa believe him. Give me a break. Give me a break.
Jim, that's an out-of-the-box campaign strategy. You people are idiots for believing crap and telling Iowa Republicans that genuine conversions aren't believable.
Yeah. Vote for me, you morons. It's never really been the ideal pitch to that. You know, two things. One is that I want to watch the full video because I've only seen snippets of it. But you notice you don't hear laughter or applause from that audience in the audio clip, right? This was not a boy, Donald was on fire last night. You can tell his theatrical style in his speaking and such. But a lot of people said that he really lost that audience, that they felt like they were watching a man have a meltdown. One, I suppose this story could have shaken out this way. I don't think – I mean, what's the Trump contention? That he never tried to stab the guy? Or he did actually stab the guy, and Ben Carson hid the body, and we never found it all these years. It's clearly something about Carson has gotten under Trump's skin. As somebody who's been accused of being out of touch for all that stuff, look, folks, this is what I've seen from the beginning, right? That this guy, you know, Donald Trump is a mouth unattached to the brain, that there is no impulse control, and there's very little he won't say or do, and that's just not a quality you want to have in a president. If this causes people to wake up for it, great. I just, you know, having said that, it does feel like we've heard, you can't believe what Trump said this time, it's going to doom him, and it has not doomed him so far. He's had some slide in the polls and stuff, but you know, I think it was probably the best response so far. I think it's come from Carly Fiorano, who says, Donald, sorry, I've got to interrupt again. You would know something about pathological.
And this isn't to defend Ben Carson. Only he knows, and maybe a couple other people know anything about this particular story. But if you want to cast doubt on it, there are better ways to do it than telling people who believe it, who are about the same number of people in the state that think you'd be a good choice for president, that they're morons.
Well, at the heart of his argument is that this, you know, display of anger from Ben Carson's youth that Trump finally, but he also simultaneously is insisting there's something pathological about Ben Carson's temper. Now, besides the fact the guy was calm enough to do like the 20-hour surgery to separate the conjoined twin, he seems pretty calm to me. Isn't this the guy who looks like he's ready to take a nap mid-answer, particularly when he's answering the question about whether he has enough energy? I mean, he'll say, look, I have a long, distinguished career, and I think I have – and you notice his head goes back and his eyes kind of tilt down, and it's kind of like this, you know, like those dolls used to be when you're sleeping or something like that. And he pauses for a second, and then he comes back up. Like a couple weeks ago, Donald Trump was saying, oh, you can't trust Ben Carson. He's got less energy than Jeb Bush. Now he's like, oh, my God, he's a maniac. Don't let this man anywhere near the Oval Office. It is a strange turn of events for Donald Trump. We will see if this hurts him in Iowa. People who are longtime Trump watchers were saying, hey, something really different happened last night. Now we'll see if there's any real fallout from that.
I think we can simply blame it on the young intern.
There we go. Yes, yes. The intern who controls Trump's temperament.
Yes. For those who don't remember, there was the first time a poll came out in Iowa where Carson was ahead of Trump. He basically accused the people of eating too much genetically modified food and then later blamed it on an intern for sending out the tweet. So amazing. Fun way to end the week. Talk to you Monday.
See you Monday, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And be sure to tune in again on Monday for the next 3 Martini Lunch. Have a great weekend, everyone.